originally in 1860, there's an article in the Advertiser suggesting they should turn it into a 2,000 seat concert hall. Never happened, and we got a festival centre instead, but that was a plan at one stage. Before Edward VII out the front, Bertie, it was mentioned earlier that I wrote the original Bradman collection and website, which was housed in the Institute building until it was taken to Adelaide Oval. And my plan was that it was there because they thought more tourists actually would walk along North Terrace than go to Adelaide Oval or to the Parkland. So my plan was to get rid of Edward VII, and have a nationwide sculpture competition to find a sculpture of Bradman that would just knock the world's eyes out, absolutely. And, you know, like layers of him playing shots up and down North Terrace and stuff, something that people would talk about forever. So I put that to the City Council, and the alderman in charge of the Art and Sculpture Committee said, "I don't think so, Lance. I like my sculptures to be sculptures." So Bertie stayed, that's probably not such a bad thing. But Bradman moved down and was hidden away in the park lands with Alfie Hanford's fantastic sculpture statues, no doubt about that, but it's been hidden away for about 10 years now. Perhaps with the opening up of Adelaide Oval, it'll become more prominent. But it was a war I lost, but I would have loved to have seen something really spectacular about Bradman in cricket.
So a few other photographs from along North Terrace. This is an interesting, Baring obviously did photograph here between Gawler Place and King William Street. Very little change has taken place, and it's a beautiful state of the architecture along there.
Look at the lovely Gawler Chambers on the left, just going to rack and ruin. Yeah. Over the South Australian Company.
And there, so this is our title page for Hindley Street.
Or it should be.
West's Coffee Palace as it was, and West's Coffee Palace as it is. Very difficult building to photograph. Baring would have... it's very hard actually to see how he cut and pasted this together, but he would have taken it. It's quite a narrow street, as you know, and he would have done this in three shots, as indeed did I later. I mentioned the other day when we were talking to the Historical Society that the evening before, when I was coming down this particular north side of Hindley Street taking photographs, I lifted the camera to take a shot of a cafe further down the street here. I won't mention the name of it. Several people dived under tables and a couple of stuck newspapers up in front of their faces. The proprietor of the cafe came running across the street wanting to tear the film out of my digital camera and accusing me of taking photographs of his new fit out for his cafe. Bearing in mind that I was outside and on the other side of the street, it was very far fetched. I think I was being mistaken for somebody else. The interesting thing is, why I mentioned that, is that when I arrived at Rio's, which is opposite this particular building here, in order to photograph this, I thought I'd better go inside and just let these people know what I'm up to. And the chap behind the bar said, "Oh yeah, the boss told me you were coming. What would you like to drink?" There are times when it's just really good to be mistaken for somebody else.
Speaking of what would you like to drink, some of you might remember La Cantina. Yes. The grand old place that was downstairs in West's. And that's where Rudolf Nureyev used to go after the show and not allow anyone to eat until he'd finished eating and drunk his bottle of champagne. Then he would throw a tizzy and leave the building. It's in the book.
So I think one of the interesting things about a streetscape like this is that, of course, one can never really see a stretch of any city street in this fashion, because you would have to be standing, I think in this instance, probably somewhere in Perry Street without anything in front of you. So it's not the way that we ever get the opportunity to view the city. I guess if you're a crow, I don't mean football player. low-flying aircraft or something, you might get a fair view of the street of this nature. But I imagined when I first started to take these photographs that maybe I could do it in a slightly different fashion to the way that Herman Baring did, and get some fancy cameras and fancy lenses that I could take panoramic shots. But of course, the laws of physics haven't changed since 1936, and basically I had to go about it in exactly the same way that he did. I just still marvel at the way that he was able to. I mean, we do have the advantage of being able to work in Photoshop and stitch things together, and we had the able assistance of one Peter Behay, the graphic print group, who did some of the fine tweaking of images so that there weren't 1.5 cars where things joined. One often had to wait for a considerable period of time for the right moment to get the shots. And of course, this being on the north side of the street, as you can see quite clearly, the sun is on the face of these buildings, so they could only be shot at that time of the year in high summer when the sun does fall on the northern side of the street. The other side of the street, the south side of the street, matters not. You can photograph it all year round because the sun's generally in the northern sky. Not always.
Look at the lovely old Wondergraph Theatre, cinema, where the jazz singer premiered in a boat.
That would have been, that is a loss, isn't it?
Rudolph Valentino is that, I mean. It's got all that mysterious nature to it.
But there are still some gems, there's still some fine buildings left even in that section there. We had noticed, looking closely, that some of these things that have a facade in the 1970s, just a series, almost like a large Venetian blind across the front, the vertical blinds. If you look through and look closely, there's a distinct possibility in some cases that these old original buildings are actually still back behind those.
Yeah, that's one of the good things that this book has uncovered. Tim Lloyd in the Advertiser wrote a piece from the book based on the fact that there are these coverings that were put up in the 70s, dreadful things that they
There's
were.
There's a classic example here, Clutterbuck's building on the end. I'm certain, having looked closely here, that much of that is still there. Just,
Perhaps they could
certainly
be removed.
Certainly a lot better looking than this.
Perhaps they could be removed and tidied up. There might be more of Adelaide left than we think there is.
That's possible. The mall. Difficult area to photograph. I think I was annoying the publisher and a few other people by insisting on waiting until a few leaves fell off trees so I could actually photograph the buildings. As we know, the current council is about to tear all the trees out and change everything. That fountain is going to be removed. I certainly recall when it used to be on the corner of the intersection of Gordon Place and Rundle Walls. Some people thought it was wise to move it there. And now, evidently, it's going to be trundled somewhere else. I'm quite sure why. This is the beautiful part of the city in 1936. Almost Dickensian, I think, is what Lance described it as. Yeah.
Look at that. They're all lovely buildings.
They are.
All of their own character.
A lot of...
And certain developers have got their hands on them.
A lot of elderly people, of course, when they go through this book, my mother-in-law remembers where she bought her wedding dress. She's 87 now. She can share with her granddaughter, going through and old memories being brought back. They spend several hours.
Yeah, it's been a hit with all ages. Actually, I put one in my local coffee shop in return for sales, and I got $10 worth of free coffee, so I can reveal that now to my publisher. But one day this young bloke was reading it, and I was in the shop, and I was pointed out to him, and he came rushing over to me, and he said, "Where did you get this?" And I said, "Well, as a matter of fact." And but he said, it's just gold. He was a young architecture student. And while Nick's mother-in-law might have loved it too, this young guy, he had a reference book for life now, as well as something that we hope would entertain him. And he was just so pleased to find out that this thing actually existed.
The old Meyer and the new Meyer. Obviously, we couldn't include the whole height of the building in here. There's simply not room on the page. I'm a bit concerned about the person that's going to do this in another 50 years' time. It's going to be some book with three layers. We kept, or Liz has gone through and selected quite a number of the beautiful old, or interesting old in some cases, ads that were in the original publication.
You can see there, as I said, the more you paid him, the more you got of your place in the book. But he also forced people to celebrate things that, or acknowledge things that they didn't really need to. I mean, it was their 72nd birthday, 72nd anniversary. Not as far as I'm concerned, particularly auspicious. But the other thing about it is, in this section of the book, both books, that is the advertising prose. Because in those days, there was no TV, radio was in its infancy. So it was the written, printed word that that dominated and got through to the buying public. And you'll read some extremely verbal prose in some of these advertisements. I might just add that Herman Baring, as I said earlier, wrote advertising slogans himself, and he's pretty well, it's pretty well been proven that he wrote the Maclay's carpets one by Direct and Make the Difference, which is work, because he did their printing for them. I rang Maclay's when I was researching the book, and they said, look, as far as we know, no one else wrote it, and it seems as though it would have been him. So,
I
said, a very talented, very diverse man.
We can't confirm the Nibble Nobby's Nuts story.
The family, the Baring family, which is very helpful in the research, and delighted to see their grandfather so recognised. They had certain slogans that he just didn't write, like Nibble Nobby's Nuts. But I went to the Nobbin family, and they denied everything. So it was good fun.
There's still a few buildings remaining. The Richmond Hotel was the Richmond Hotel then, and it's still the Richmond Hotel then. One of the few balconies that remains, probably not the same balcony. One of Lance's favourite buildings here.
Yes, I like that. It's a lovely building there. Just
obscured by something that's about to be taken away. There's a makeshift coffee kiosks that run down the middle of the mall. They were a photographer's nightmare, let me tell you, trying to photograph the buildings on the opposite side of the street. Mm. So,
that's where Clipsum started, just in that area, in that precinct.
So that was our, obviously, the north side of the mall, and then the way the book works is you now move over to the south side, starting from Pulteney Street, and move up the other side of the mall. We'll do that quite quickly. There's no need to dally over these things. There's Kurt Flugelman's balls that are about to be moved as well, for better or for worse.
Not right.
Rundle Street in the East End is a part of town where very little architecture change has occurred, and it'd be my observation that, and everybody else, as I would imagine, that this is the part of town where people like to go, to congregate, to dine, to drink, and be with their friends. And
as the members of my Tom Club who are here tonight, there are four of them, one on the committee. The Exeter Hotel is where we sometimes go for the Sunday lunch after we play. And there was a murder in the Exeter Hotel in the late 60s, and I wanted to include it in the book. I rang, and they denied everything. They said, no, we know nothing about it. And then I rang again, and they didn't answer the phone. But once the book was published, everyone said, yeah, we know all about it. It was 1968, and it was over. Crime of passion and all that sort of thing. So unfortunately, it's not in the book, but I can tell you now.
That bird is real. It's not something we put in after. This is an interesting part of the exercise. When I was up the ladder, on the south side of Rundle Street East, photographing the Tavistock buildings on the other side there, which is between what we now know as Frome Road and the Exeter Hotel or Vaughan Place. There appeared to be a building missing. As you can see, we've got, just go back again, Tavistock Hotel was not there. I didn't realise, of course, that there had been such a thing as a Tavistock Hotel, so I sort of went back to the computer and went home and sort of, this is bewildering, because how can there be a building missing when in fact there's a street there? It couldn't have been sitting in the street. But then I found out that in fact the Tavistock Hotel was in fact moved so that Tavistock Street could be widened to give us Frome Road.
You learned something. We learned something since last Friday night, didn't we, when we were talking about this? Because on the other side, you see in time, there's just a little narrow passageway about the side for just approaching horse and carriage width. And that went from Rundle Street to Grenfell Street. And then there was a street behind it, which I only just realised, called Ackland Street. And Tavistock Street was widened, the beautiful hotel was knocked down. Buildings were removed from either side of this little carriageway, as you see. And then Ackland Street was widened right down to Carrington Street to become what is now Frome Street. And the plan was, back in the 1960s, the town clerk did a world tour and decided that cars were going to dominate our lives, the rest of our lives, and therefore they needed more room to move. So the plan was that for the trucks, were actually going to rumble down Frome Street all the way to Ben Osmond Road and then off to Melbourne and Sydney, which is a horrific thought. That in fact was the plan.
Instead of having a Portrush Road and South Road, you just channel it through there.
But last Friday night we met our match in the State Historical Society. They explained to us that not only that there would be tunnels under North Adelaide and down Margaret Street, North Adelaide, and under the university. Was that right?
Yes.
Yeah. And up along Gawler Place was to be widened. There was going to be semi-trailers running along there as well. Just imagine what that would have done for Adelaide.
Yeah.
Luckily somebody stopped it.
We imagine there's been some unfortunate changes, but there's been a few avoided.
Yeah.
Well. Yeah, we also got into trouble at the Historical Society on Friday when I mentioned that I went back to the computer to find out about the missing Tavistock Hotel, up came some information about Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, and he evidently was in Adelaide at around about that time and on one of his spiritualist tours, and he stayed at the Tavistock Hotel. Then when I looked closely, I realised that it was the Tavistock Hotel in London that he used to stay. But then I imagine that he probably would have stayed here as well. Lance made some remark about the opium addict.
I made a mistake.
And so a few people's hands go up. He wasn't an opium addict. He wasn't a drug addict at all. It was Sherlock Holmes that was doing it.
But I tried to stand my ground, and I've done a bit of research too. And now it's coming to light that Conan Doyle might well have liked to dabble himself
in the cocaine.
So
I'm entirely wrong.
I'm clinging to life.
So that's how it looks now, and not a great difference. And as we say, a place where people certainly love to congregate. And the architecture is a warm and friendly environment. It's certainly not overbearing in any way. This would have been the front bar of the Tavistock Hotel, where it's still standing. So there's Lance and I in the front bar, check.
We decided the team photo would be us working in the front bar of the Tavistock Hotel. And that's John Greenshields, the recently retired senior heritage architect of the City Council, who was a big help to me in the research for this book. We had many
counter-dinners. Over two pages.
And the other bloke is a council worker, a good friend of mine from my local pub, the Duke of Brunswick, a living legend, certainly now. He's bought lots of copies of the book. He's got four pieces he wishes, and they've each got one, and I think he wishes he had more.
So do we. Okay. So we're continuing our journey down the north side of...
Do you want to talk about the flat city, how it made it?
Yes, that's the interesting, unique aspect of this book, perhaps, is that would be very difficult, if not impossible, to create streetscapes of this nature if Adelaide wasn't situated on a plain. If you could imagine, an extreme case would be San Francisco, where you would start, you know, the buildings would start at the top corner and wind up down there as they staggered down. In fact, same difficulty even in a place like Sydney. The other thing too, of course, is that you can't create a book like this unless somebody else has done something of this nature 80 or 90 years before. So, unless anybody here is aware of another book of this kind in the world, perhaps somewhere in the middle of America where there's a big flat city, we feel that, well, I said to anyone, because I've looked extensively, nobody's put their hand up and said, I know of a case of an Atlanta city being photographed 100 years ago and again now. This book is probably unique on the planet because of the topography and because of Baring's vision, really, quite extraordinary.
Sydney didn't work, did it?
Sydney didn't work. I, having finished this book and heard on the grapevine that he'd gone to Sydney afterwards, I thought, how could he have done that? I realised how difficult it was here. But there's even a slight slope in these sections of Adelaide where Liz Nicholson from Design By had all kinds of problems, just, you know, tweaking them and keeping them flat for the purposes of the page. But when I looked closely, I went to the Mitchell Library, and I don't think there is a book, a copy here too, of the book that he did on Sydney. And he gave up very, very soon after he started, and it was just far too difficult. The book does exist because he did things like go out to Orange and Bathurst and Dubbo and cities around and yeah. where it was flat and created the book nevertheless.
Yes, it was for Sydney's 150th anniversary in 1938.
That's right, he was there for that.
This one's the winner.
Oh yes, most certainly. The Sydney book doesn't work. So we turn around and we'll quickly go down the south side of Rundle Street East. This is between East Terrace and Barton Avenue, of course. We're all familiar with it because we go there, many of us, quite often. And it's still much the same now as it was back when Barring was taking his photograph, except when we arrive opposite the mysteriously disappearing Sherlock Holmes Tavistock Hotel, we find that another example of the beautiful old ads, fascinating old ads, were in the original book. That's the interior of the Austral.
Mixed lounge too.
Mixed the lounge.
Ladies were allowed.
So there we are, this Frome Road on the other side, and if you look at the photograph above, of course, you can see it was just a passageway. That's Frome Street.
What is now Frome Street?
Yeah. What is now Frome Street.
And behind that was Acton Street. Which only went as far as Wakefield Street. So they were dead keen on getting these trucks rumbling through the city.
We're up to Pulteney Street, between Tench Street and Pulteney. This is what that's what Foy's looked like in 1936, and that's what it looks like now.
At the Grand Hotel, and before Foy's it was the Grand Hotel,
where Sir Arthur Conan Doyle did it.
And just to change,
put Sherlock on the case.
Just to change the subject a little bit, Mark Twain stayed there too.
Yeah, we're trying to pull a few people in. I don't know where Joseph Conrad hung out or Gauguin. They were around at the time as well, a little earlier than that. We've included this image of Curry Street, south side between King William and Topham Moore, because it includes the wonderful old Adelaide Steamship Company building, which has been replaced with that other thing.
on the Federal Government Register, it's just listed as one word, destroyed.
Destroyed.
So then we, cases like that, we make sure that the reader knew what we thought about that devastation.
Granville Street, as it is, a different type of facade, isn't there, where the front of the old buildings are kept and the other things pop up behind them. was another tricky time for me when I was up the ladder on Grenfell Street, south side, photographing across to the north side, and I'm faced with this predicament here. There was this enormous building, and all I could find there from my viewfinder was this here. But then I realised that not only was Gustav Baring quite capable if people didn't buy an ad of taking their building out of the if people coughed up big time, and then it would be hard to buy a building.
And that's exactly the same building.
Improved signage as well. But that was, what was it, one of those Rigby's?
Rigby's, yeah. And Rigby's, of course, would have been big clients of Baring co-printers, so he had no shame.
It's nearly time for us to stop doing this and see if there are any questions.
But just quickly, Harris Scarfs, I don't know whether you've been through it, but I had a look through it the other day and it seems functional and effective enough, but I certainly didn't feel as though I was in a place of wonder for a department. Pretty average. And there's a lovely old stone ironwork in that one. The building on the bottom, on the right-hand side, was where IBM was in Australia in 1930, in South Australia in 1936. It was around even then, and around in Perry Street we had Mazda making light bulbs, or selling light bulbs.
Imagine taking 1,000 negatives and having to print them, or process them first, develop them, print them, and then cut them and paste them up into these streetscapes. An extraordinary task that man performed, really. We had Weymouth Street.
When I worked at the advertiser, Weymouth Street was the dullest street in Adelaide. Mm, yeah. Just a windswept tunnel, that's all it was. Yeah. It's a union hotel and nothing else. Now there's a restaurant and a nightclub around in every street corner, and I'm nowhere to be seen.
There's an old ad from 1936, some sort of still Depression times, I suppose. There is money in Angora rabbits.
Used
to be Steve Marriott from the Small Faces in a previous incarnation.
Obviously, someone had talked to Herman about a new industry in South Australia, and that was shearing Angora rabbits to make clothing out. And I actually rang the Angora Society of South Australia to find out why. And they were... It was though I was some sort of spy. They said, but before I asked them what, they said, why are you ringing? I explained, and it took about 10 minutes for her to believe that I was actually serious. But then she pointed out that, this woman pointed out that, yes, they can be shorn and made into beautiful jumpers. But I think it would have been a fairly labour-intensive job. I've never seen a neck or a rabbit industry. They didn't tell Australia here.
I'd like you to be able to see this image as it is in the book across two pages. That's the second half of it. But when you open the book, you've got this on the left and that on the right. As Lance points out, Perry Street pretty well is entirely demolished in terms of the old buildings and replaced with
from King William Street to get more square.
70s, 80s architecture. I met an architect the other day. Bought a copy of the book from me, and he said that this building here is still of interest to architects, even though we may regard it as something quite ugly. It has, I think it's, where's that marble from? My wife, you know, told me, not from Angaston or something. They're bolted on. Interesting architectural elements exist in some of these buildings.
It used to be directly opposite the old advertiser building, and I remember the story of the people in the advertiser building watching them fall off. And that's when they had to be bolted on.
They weren't originally bolted on. It wasn't an architectural element. Okay. There you go. So, Electrolux. Guys knows the story here. The only cleaning system that does all these things for you is your complete home cleaning service, by which carpets, stairs, upholstery, curtains, etc. can be thoroughly cleaned with rapid rapidity and ease. It cleans and polishes linoleums, bare floors, and one quick, easy operation. But it also does a number of other things. Did at the time.
Paint your house with it. And you can groom your horse with it.
Everybody knows that.
I rang Electrolux on this one, and they just didn't have anything to do with me. Makes it. But a couple of, I've told a couple of people about this ad and what the Electrolux can do, and I was thinking, isn't this amazing? And they said, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And I was there, as though their grandmother showed them how to do it 40 years ago. It was a done thing.
It operates as a hairdryer.
Dry your hair and your horse.
I think we're just about to the end of the images that we've selected for you to look at. There are many, many more in the book. This is just a view from the car park looking down into Chinatown in the autumn. This is Lance's corner of the town. There's a lovely essay here from the heart. We can't stop and talk about this now because we've reached the end of our time talking, and we have to ask if there are any questions. Any questions?
Thank you. I would just confess one thing, that every one of Barry's images in the book we photographed, except there's one section of Brown Street, now called Morford Street, that was so drab in 1936, just one little building virtually, and so drab in 2010 that Liz Nicholson, the designer, looked at me and I looked at her and we just said no. But apart from that, it's true to the first.
Michael Boland frequents Writers Week, the Writers' Centre, and he noticed when he has his cigarette from the landing out the back that there's a fabulous view through to the hills here showing new architecture and old architecture. This is York Street? York Lane. Runs parallel to Runner Street East. It's the last image in the book. What do we have? We've got to draw a lot.
No, have the questions? Are there any questions anyone wants to ask?
Well, just a piece of information. Next to the hotel, late 1940s, early 50s, certain people used to play tennis out in the park land and return to the hotel after 6 o'clock closing, and you sit upstairs with the lights off and run the street lights through the windows and have a tipple.
Yeah, right, and
have a tipple.
Right.
Yeah. After hours.
Did you know those people?
You played tennis with them?
No, I was only 5 at the time.
Any other questions?
It's not exactly a question, but I've got a photograph of Stanley Street, North Adelaide in 1888, and they had to take 6 photos, and when they put them together, the street is curved or goes dead straight in reality.
Yes, that is what. When were they taken, sorry?
1888.
That's right. Well, had they used the camera that Baring used with movements that corrected in the camera?
No, they took 6 separate photos.
I know, but even then, you must correct the perspective for each individual photo before you cut and paste them together.
Well, I wasn't there.
No, I'm not holding you responsible.
Okay,
that's why.
I think we'll have to finish up then.
We will.
This has just been a wonderful journey. It's a tour de force of photography, of history, and just a wonderful journey. It's amazing to see what's been saved, what's been lost, and comparing to it. It's been a wonderful night.
Yeah.
And to express our gratitude, I'd like to give you both these tokens. Book tokens.
Oh, thank you.
And we also have a task we'd like you to draw a record.
No looking.
Yellow 081.
Well, thank you very much, guys. This is just been true.
Can I kind of say it's Mick and I are having a great time promoting the book, but from my point of view, in my writing life, I've written millions and millions and millions of words, and they all last a day, most of them last a day or a month. To have something with Mick's photographs and this is designed between, in a book like this that will last forever and will go into your library. It's just, it's a great thrill for me, so I'll talk about it any time. Thank you for having me.
Thank you to Wakefield Press.
Thank you, Wakefield Press.
Yes.
We have just a couple of announcements. On the 1st of May, the 1st of May, Tim Bullimore, talking on Jane Austen, Pride and Prejudice. And he's a terrific expert on Jane Austen. Then, that's in 3 weeks' time on a Wednesday. Then on May the 23rd, we have Jane Sloan, Global Advocacy of Women's Rights, Stories and Solutions, which should be very interesting. There's a couple of other events that are associated with the Grand of the Library. The Independent Theatre is doing the Magnificent Ambersons in a season from April the 19th to the 22nd, and there are some flyers at the back with a discount for people who want to see the Magnificent Ambersons. And the Theatre Guild is doing something on May the 4th to the 18th. I'm not quite sure what it is.
I'm not sure.
So to finish up, I'd like to thank the sponsors, Uni Books for the vouchers for the speakers, Coriel Vineyards, Henry's Drive for the wine. I'd like to thank all the helpers from the committee, all the members in the committee who've put the evening on tonight. And I think that's all. I'll the adoptable. You will speak to them.
No, but I don't worry. I will speak to adoptable if I have to. We heard Wakefield Press mentioned several times tonight, and Michael Ballin, who is the one of the directors of the press. It was a brilliant idea. He picked the right people to do it. Many of you might not know Michael. Michael, will you stand up and let them see? We're so lucky to have Wakefield Press in this city. Thank you, Michael. Well, we do have a program in our rare books room. It's something that I didn't initiate, so I'm speaking to it secondhand. We have rare books that often do need restoration. And so if you're interested in perhaps contributing to the library to help restore one of our rare books, we have an Adopt a Book program. And if you're interested in being involved in helping us fund the restoration of something that's rare and valuable, please stop and talk to any member of the library staff and friends, and we'll give you more details. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.